want to talk to you today about two things. The new scale of the six basic processes doesn't particularly alter these processes, but it's a new understanding of these processes, and consequences. These two things, the new six basic process scale and consequences. First and foremost, as we look over the state of mind of preclears, the primary task presents itself at the same time. How far south do you have to go? How far south? Now you sit a preclear down in the chair, and he sits there, and you sit there, and so forth. Why? How far south do we have to go? Well, I can tell you exactly and precisely how far south you have to go. You have to go to his reality. That's how far south. Now, it may or may not be that you can get this far south. In a psycho, unable to care for himself, his body, unable to recognize anything in the environment, dramatizing madly all the time or lying in a complete apathy, the task of going south is somewhere south of the South Pole. And you'd need some sort of an earth borer to get in communication. Nevertheless, you can still get in communication there. What is the reality of this person? Now, here we have communication as the universal solvent, the primary solvent. It'll knock apart any aberration. It'll fix up almost anything. Just by talking to a psychotic preclear, you can produce some rise. Just by talking to them. They don't even have to answer. You can produce a rise of tone. Communication is the solvent. What is the diagnosis? The diagnosis is R, the ARC triangle. The diagnosis is R. That's how far south you have to go to get the first echelon of R of the preclear and increase it. And that's what you're doing. All right, now here's an ARC triangle. What is then A? A is the suppressor, the restrictor on the preclear. A actually contains, as well as emotions and affinity, contains in our modern understanding of it, solids. Emotion condenses into effort, and effort condenses and condenses and condenses. And as we go down the emotional scale, we find ourselves into effort. And as we go down effort, we finally find ourselves below effort. You ever know a fellow who couldn't work? Well, he's below effort. Now you're going to ask this fellow who can't work to get some emotion. Let's think about that for a moment. This fellow can't work, can't produce effort, and now we say, well, he can't get any good out of life. You know, he isn't enjoying life. There isn't any feeling for other people. He doesn't have any real understanding of pain or anything like this for others. Here's effort. He's below it. He's got to come up through an effort band to get on the emotional scale. Such a person will quite normally tell you that he mustn't be unhappy. That's the worst thing that could happen to him, would be to become unhappy. What is being unhappy to this person? How does he define this word? Well, let's give you some idea of how far south you have to go. How does this person define this word unhappy? A safe dropped on his head. That's unhappy. Get the idea? Force. Intolerable motion. That's being unhappy. And you say, well, this guy's crazy. He's afraid of being unhappy. Yeah, but you haven't inquired what unhappy means to this individual. Well, being cut to pieces with small knives or something like that, that's being unhappy. He's below effort. All right. Now let's look across these six basic processes and get some sort of an idea what our individual would have to be able to do before he could even vaguely be free. He would have to be willing to experience anything in this universe. Because those things which he's unwilling to experience will continue to act as threats and barriers to him. So on the A corner of the triangle, we have the anatomy of barriers. The anatomy of barriers, whether they're space or masses, no matter what they are, they're barriers. And when you get those up high enough, you get, where do you get? Into emotion. And when you get emotion up high enough, he can look. He can confront mass. Only when you get him up above mass. Now we say this individual, but he can't see mock-ups, he can't do this, he can't do that, and so forth. We have an individual who is very afraid of the barrier called effort or mass. This individual's afraid of mass. We have an individual who doesn't have any space. You say, all right, now let's spot Seattle. And the fellow says, so it's right there. And you say, well, now where is it? And he says, it's right there. That's Seattle. And what's the matter with it? He can't confront space. That's what's the matter with it. So space is taken out of everything. He just says, space doesn't exist. It better not exist, because if it existed, I'd be swamped and lost, dead, gone, buried, anatomized, and be given a government income tax form to fill out. I mean, anything bad would come his way if he were asked to confront space. So what happened if you got this individual to tolerate effort? If you got him to tolerate effort, you would find he was unable to tolerate motion of effort, you see. I mean, if you got him to tolerate the lower bands and masses, something sitting still, you would still have to get up through the fact that this stuff sometimes moves around. All right? And if you got him through that, where would you have to take him? It would be through the barriers of emotion. And then the barriers of perception. Why is perception a barrier? Why are any of these things barriers? Well, that's the question you, as an auditor, have to know pretty well. Because if you don't know that, then the whole task is hopeless. There is no slightest possibility of you doing anything for anybody, about anybody, or yourself. You're done, you're dead, that's the end. If you don't know that. And that is that these things are all considerations. It's true that some considerations are more solid than others. But these things are all a matter of consideration. Now, an individual, in order to be free in this universe, doesn't have to go out, as some people do, and get themselves tortured and shot and raped and ruined in various fashions. They don't have to. It's not necessary for them to do this. Because all that we have here is the consideration of willingness. It's the consideration of willingness. That is all that is necessary to change. In other words, all we have to do in order to come all the way up this A side of the triangle from its lowest depths to its highest heights is change the consideration of affinity. That's all we have to do. All right. The crux of the matter then, if we have this ARC triangle, seems to be the considerations of the pre-clear. And these seem to be more important than anything else. And they are. Now, modern science, whatever modern science is, love that word. I think they were using it in the later days of the Ptolemy era. Modern science. If you beat a drum hard enough, the scientific methodology of the day decreed that everybody would then be death or something. And tremendous advances they made. They found out that it was the sound wave and so forth that did this. And the sound wave was actually carried by the wind and was borne by the goddess of sound. And this was modern science. Modern science 2,000 years ago said that the world was built as a sort of the flat side of a hemisphere. And there was half flat side of a hemisphere. And modern science decreed several thousand years ago that this was sitting there and that was Earth, and modern science kept on plowing along, and they found out that you had a great many pillars, seven pillars, I think, which are supporting this hemisphere, and they did further research, just like they do over here at the AEC, same seriousness, same pitch, same conclusions, same goal, destroy Earth. Here are your seven pillars that supported this hemisphere, and then the advancing research, the great minds of the area, and so on, in India finally found out that these seven pillars were on the backs of seven elephants. And the seven elephants were right there, and modern science was not satisfied with that, so they found out that the seven elephants were standing on a mud turtle. And there was a mud turtle there, and they researched further, invested thousands of talents or rupees or milrays or something, and invested these billions, just like the AEC does, and finally discovered that the mud turtle was standing, of course, upon mud. And this was a great triumph. And the government wouldn't put out any further appropriations, so they concluded that it was mud from there on down. Now, this was a scientific conclusion. I mean, you notice it has nothing in it but mass. And today's modern scientific conclusions have nothing in them but mass. The modern scientists, just like the ancient scientists alike, cannot confront space. And they will tell you that the consideration is secondary to space and mass. And that is the one booby trap, the one primary error on all the track of science in all the thousands of years that we have had scientists. We've got that the postulate, the consideration, was secondary to masses and spaces. Now, you in grammar school, before grammar school, in high school, and in the university if you went there, were indoctrinated across the boards on this fact that the consideration was secondary to mass and space. Now, let's see if that is true. You know, modern biology, a parody on the early biology of the turtle in the mud, decrees that life is secondary to mass. Life is born out of mud. Now, if life is secondary to mass, certainly considerations are secondary to mass. And so they set it up that way so it cannot be undone. And the only reason thee and me can get around a pre-clear and put him in any better condition at all is because we do not operate on the basis that life and its postulates and considerations, because all life is an ability, a quality of postulating and consideration, that we do not operate that life and its postulates and considerations are secondary and take precedence after mass and space. We know that today like we never knew it before. We have spent many, many months in pushing around masses. You know, get the pre-clear to change his masses. Now, you can get him to change his masses so he'll change his ideas. That's creative processing. You can get him to work in that direction, but how far will you go? Well, you will come up to his confronting of the more diabolical or painful aspects of effort And here we will not discover him changing any further. So it has a limited process because there's not enough C in it. All right, for our purposes, completely aside from any other consideration, for our purposes, life has the quality of knowing, considering, postulating, communicating. And it also has the ability to consider that it is secondary to mass and space, which is quite an ability. This is a remarkable ability, that life can consider itself secondary to anything. This is the nicest trick that an individual can play by himself. All right. Let's take a look then at this ARC triangle. And let's discover that its liability is wherever it goes into motion, masses, and spaces. And its plus factors are wherever it goes into considerations, postulates, and knowings. So let's just take the triangle at any level. Let's take a thetan caught in the biggest, most tumultuous, space-bounded theta trap. Any thetan ever got caught in. And let's find that right there, in that condition, we have these two sides of the triangle. On one side, we have the fact that there is, apparently, energy, there is motion, and there is space. And on the other side of it, however, we have not lost the ability to consider, to postulate, or to know. Now, one of the characteristics of the ability to consider, to postulate, and to know, one of the characteristics is that it can consider, postulate, and know mass, motion, and space. Now, that's a major thing. Now, the Christian Scientist not-ises all this and winds up his people in the local spin bin simply by saying, well, it all exists, so it's an illusion. You get the secondary postulate there. He said, it's all there, and we've got to do something about it. And our having to do something about it makes us now state that it's an illusion. And what has Christian Science done? It has denied part of the ability to make a postulate, a consideration, or to know. You get this now. It's set itself up so it can't as-is this stuff. You see this. If you say, look at all this space and motion and effort, look at it. The best way to handle this stuff is, it's illusion. Isn't that a cute trick? Drive you madder and a hatter in less time than it'd take for a rosary to count its priests. Now, here we have not isness, all there isness. And a gorgeous, gorgeous picture it is. We say the thing exists, now what are we going to do about it? Well, we'll say it doesn't exist. No, let's just change our minds about the primary thing. It exists, it doesn't exist. It exists, it doesn't exist. If it exists, and if I not is it, I'm dead. If it exists, and I recognize even vaguely that I am the contributing party to its existence, it blows. So we have responsibility. as part of all this, don't we? Well, where does R sit? Responsibility. Responsibility actually moves in when reality rises. Well, why would reality rise at all? It's because responsibility rises. Right? Now, there was a church that had an interesting setup. It was well across the world. It was called the Roman Catholic Church. And the Roman Catholic Church had everybody set up so they couldn't accept responsibility, but originally it was a good idea. Mea culpa, magna culpa, maxima culpa, mea culpa. See? It exists and it's my fault. In other words, there's something wrong with the fact that I'm making this stuff exist. It's just another consideration, isn't it? Just another consideration. Something wrong with my making this stuff exist. Mea culpa. If I have sinned, why, I have to take the blame for it. You get this? Actually, the thing as is on this fashion. When you sinned, you didn't consider there was very much blame connected with it. And then afterwards, you say, now there's some new factor connected with it called blame. Believe me, now I have blame connected with it. And believe me, it won't as is. Why? Because we've altered it. We said there's something wrong with my having sinned. You know, if you want to as is sin, why, you don't have to have anything wrong with it or right with it. If you really wanted sin to as is, whatever sin is, I don't know. Preaching sermons, entering nunneries after a certain hour, convincing people that they have sinned, inventing a hell with seven levels, I would say these are major sins. And if one has sinned, the only way you'll ever really get out of having sinned is having sinned. You get the idea. You know, well, that's the way it is. You know, there she is. That's the way it is. Well, the way one makes such an incident persist is to sin, whatever that is, and say to somebody, or say right afterwards, oh, let's say this sin is sexual intercourse. And you rape somebody, you know, and you stand back and you say, oh my, I've ruined them, they're dead. Do you know that if you carefully looked it over, you wouldn't find at any moment during the rape when you were saying, oh, look what I've done, you see. That isn't part of the actual incident, is it? So if you can just get somebody real quick, you know, right after they've done something or other, and say, now, you've got to admit that it's your fault. Not that you did it. You've got to admit that it's your fault and that you were to blame for this having occurred. They can never get rid of the sin. You can hang on right away. You get the idea? You see how this would work? He's done it and he's sorry for it. But so help me. While he was doing it, he wasn't sorry a nickel's worth. And just by the addition of the consideration of sorrow to the incident and trying to find sorrow in the incident, then sticks right there, won't as is. You see this very clearly. So what is responsibility? Responsibility is accepting things as they are. And that's all responsibility is. Now, you get hung up in a preacher sometimes on the basis of, yes, it's all very well for me to accept things as they are, or do things as I did them, or just do things, or something of the sort, and say I'm responsible here, but what did I do? Well, there is another consideration on the track, which is one of the serious considerations, and that is the forgetter mechanism. An individual lives this life. He's a minor war chief someplace or another, and his particular penchant was robbing all the neighboring villages of virgins for his particular use, and eating babies for dinner just to show people how tough he was, and so forth. And in his later life, a new medicine man who came to the tribe got him to realize that maybe he ought to bring some peace, you know, to the area. But it wasn't so good to have all this war, and got him to change a few considerations, you see. And he changed these considerations, and now, with these considerations, that it is bad to rob, rape, pillage, and burn. So with that consideration, then he now is not in a position to admit that he robbed, raped, pillaged, and burned. You see this? He's now not in a position to, because he's changed his considerations, in other words, his makeup. So he kicks the bucket one fine day, and when he's 5 feet back of the body and moving off, and it's lying there stiffer than a pine board, he says, that wasn't such a good life. You know, it was confusing. It wasn't such a good life. So I'll just forget the whole thing. You know? Now you come along and you say, all right, fella, be 3 feet back of your head. This memory goes bad. Cute, huh? You say, all right, now let's just recall something there that you've done in life. Huh? Not because, let me assure you, that while he was pillaging the neighboring villages for virgins, and while he was dining upon baby, he remembered every single detail of it. Didn't he? His memory was right there on the ball, wasn't it? As a matter of fact, about midway through his career, if you walked up to him and you'd ask him, now, listen, Chief, there's been an argument out here. Was it 18 or was it 21 virgins that we took from Yuck Village? And he would have said, it was 19. Their names were... And there was that one with black hair. You remember him? Yeah, that's right. Got in amongst the women, you know. Remember the fun we had with it? Well, anyway, what is the matter with you that your memory is so stinking? He would have said. Later on in his career, he's changed his considerations. You walk in, you say, Chief, there's been a dissension out here. We're having a discussion as to how many virgins we stole from Yuck Village. Was it 18 or 21? And he would say, Yuck Village. Let's see, is that one of the raids that you conducted? Well, I wouldn't know about that. The father inferior would be upset if I did. So as we look over this seed, we find out that there is an ingredient placed into his memory. Not blame this time, but forgetfulness. Well, what is this but another consideration injected into the situation? And it doesn't as is then, because all the time he was doing it, he remembered like mad. And forgetfulness was not a part of it, was it? So we have changed the makeup. We have made a mystery. Now he goes along a few lifetimes, and one day he's walking through the site of Yuck Village, and he gets some deja vu or something. He says, you know, I've been here before, or something of the sort. I wonder what this was all about. I don't feel comfortable about it, but I've been here before. I have some foreboding of evil. Something happened here. Wonder what could have occurred. Figure. And that sticks him with the raid on Yuck Village. He can't as is it because he doesn't know about it, he says. And why doesn't he know about it? Because he forgot it. Well, why did he forget it? So he wouldn't know about it. And I've thought occasionally that this is just the last ditch stand of a Thetan to keep from azizing a lot of very gory but beautiful past. Well, all right, supposing you did remember everything the way it was. Supposing you did take complete responsibility for all your own acts, and also the responsibility for not taking responsibility for other people's acts, that's also an important responsibility. Well, you did this, where would you wind up? You wouldn't have any masses, but you wouldn't have any spaces. Well, if you're a son of a gun, you'd sure have some knowingness, wouldn't you? So the way we get masses and spaces and make them persist is to sacrifice our knowingness to them. And this is all the mechanism there is. If you want masses and spaces, you got to be stupid. Well, maybe masses and spaces are all right. Maybe they're all wrong. That's just a consideration. You see this? Maybe motion is bad, maybe it's good. Who cares? It's just a consideration. Maybe a sin is a sin, and maybe it's a saintly act. Who cares? It's just a consideration. But if you want masses, spaces, and motions, you'd certainly better forget them and take no responsibility for them. Who put this universe here? Who did that? Filthy beast. The place is just a trap. It'll stay there. Supposing with loving care you sculpted a mock-up of some density and solidity. With great care you sculpt this mock-up and took a lot of interest in sculpting it. Big interest in it. And then you wanted it to persist. Well, one of the ways, not the best one, but one of the ways of doing it would be to step back and say, that is the ugliest thing that anybody ever made. I wonder why anybody would make that mark. Isn't this a horrible thing to do? I wonder who made it. And did it last? Why would it last? Because an ingredient has been entered into it to prevent its being as is. And if you were really up on your considerations and so forth, all you'd have to do is know all there was to know about something and it would disappear. Thus we get the exact sciences, a parade of lies from beginning to end. There is no lie like the fundamental law of physics. Conservation of energy. We got this law, conservation of energy. It must follow immediately if we have conservation of energy. If energy cannot be destroyed, then it must be one hell of a lie. See, it just follows through immediately. And that is the primary premise of this so-called science physics. And physics is a method of keeping people from knocking apart the environment in which you find yourself. By having everybody become a slave to a sufficient number of lies, then nobody will discover the truth. Thus, it is a science of persistence. And thus, a wall, to a physicist, persists heavier and thicker and more solidly than anything you ever confronted. You'd have to be trained from beginning to end in physics to know how solid a wall can become. We get a physicist out of his head. Now he's going to stick to something, you know, to the degree that it is a mystery. Here's the test. This is a little fact that we know. We're going to stick to something to the degree that we don't assess it. We're going to stick to something to the degree that we don't assess it. We got that? All right. When you get a physicist out of his head and he touches a wall, he sticks to it. But above all people, this man has been educated about matter. And he shouldn't, under any consideration, stink to matter, because he's an expert on the subject. Well, it must be that what he knows about it is entirely false. Do you see that? Now, somebody who's pretty well trained in Scientology, exteriorized, in pretty good shape, passes right through one. Who knows about it? The physicist or the Scientologist? Now, where we have mass, motion, and space, we must have had an alteration of the basic consideration. Hence we get the myth about God having built the universe in so many days and then going on a picnic on Sunday. Why the Baptist schools still go on picnics. Celebrate this. Well, that is just a total no responsibility, isn't it? Somebody else built the whole thing. I didn't have any part in it. Now we get it pretty clear, and even the Baptist, we set this pretty clear down. We said, all right, now you get the idea. We could do it very overtly. And just get the idea that you built the whole universe. Now get it again, get it again, get it again. And he will finally admit that he and 8 or 9 more probably did build it. And we just keep going away at this and talking about it and as-ising older considerations about it. And the first thing you know, everything turns up with great brilliance. It probably won't last because we're hammering and pounding him to get him to make the consideration. But everything will turn up with great brilliance, and he'll feel very relieved suddenly. You know? We've just gotten him to say, finally, no matter what duress, see, this would be real crude processing. And say, now, if you don't admit that you built the universe, they're going to knock you off. Real crude. Nevertheless, everything will suddenly go bright for him. Isn't that interesting? Now, because he hasn't really changed his considerations at all, it'll go dull again because he'll get back on how God built it. An anxiety about persistence comes about through the invention and subscription to time. Time brings about an anxiety about existence because it brings about continuous loss. Therefore, to assert time and to keep it rolling, you would have to worry about loss. And then it would roll automatically for you. See how it would? Time is a mechanism which takes care of your old mock-ups. The Greeks had a fellow by the name of Kronos who was keeping the time rolling. You see? But it's a mechanism which disposes of waste products, garbage, yesterday's boiler. And it goes clickety, 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 click. This is time you see, please. As long as you are not making time 100%. Now, I don't know if anybody actually did take the tip in 1955 and have somebody start making time. It's a long process which is done without any evaluation at all for the pre-clear. But he's making time, and when you plunge into the middle of that vortex, and he comes up with the fact that he did and does, all kinds of weird things happen. He's suddenly confronted with all kinds of material. All kinds of material which he would better not have, he thinks. He finds that the universe hasn't been moving at all. It's all stuck in one place anyhow. He discovers all sorts of bitter and unsavory things. But the point of it, that works out too, because all he's got to do is make some more time and it moves out onto a time track. All right. ARC. R has a lot to do with agreement. So let's move right over onto agreement as the most salient point here. You are one. There have to be two in order to as is anything. That's what communication says. You're one. There have to be two to as is anything, because only then you could have communication. Well, has anybody ever told you shouldn't congratulate yourself? You know, you shouldn't pat yourself on the back. Has anybody ever inferred that the wrong thing to do is to praise yourself? Have you ever run into this? There's some faint chance that you have, since it's the primary aberration of the society. That's to keep people in a two-way communication. Isn't that a neat mechanism? That's a very sweet mechanism. All you have to do is have people on a two-way communication and then make them entirely dependent on a two-way communication, because the only approval they can get is from a second party over whom they have no control. You get that as a cute way of making a persistence? The only approval they can get is from a second party with whom they are communicating, over whom they have no control. Makes a lot of randomity. It's quite interesting. Because if you've ever associated with a gang of kids, the amount of praise which you got on your clothes and attributes, I would say, was quite slight. The amount of approval which is discoverable in a bunch of teenagers would be measured at best with a very good microscope. In other words, here you are busy depending on others for approval, for agreement, for the other side of your postulate. And you say, now we have to have two to make a postulate. Have to have two to as is anything. We have to have two to carry on in life. Takes two to agree. You can't agree with yourself. So you're running a preclair and his reality is very poor. I'll tell you how poor his reality is. His reality is as poor as he thinks. He has to depend upon others to acknowledge him, to then bring about an agreement which will as is. You see that? His reality is as poor as he is dependent upon communication with another party to as is the material. Now, actually, if he himself can approve of himself, if he can agree with himself, if he himself can establish two terminals, just that, he can have a universe without any further slightest difficulty. And he could knock it apart without any further difficulty. But if he is just one and must conceive of himself as being just one and the only one there is that he can immediately control, then he has to approve, depend for his approval on somebody else over here, you see, to have two terminals in order to make a universe, in order to have a flow, in order to have some distance, in order to have some space. So the second he becomes less than two, or less capable than two, then, immediately after that, he is dependent on somebody else in order to make the other side of the terminal. And thus we get communication operative only between two people, neither one of which control the other. To have a universe, you have to have two terminals. An individual cannot do it. But an individual is in the interesting state of being able to acknowledge and approve of himself. And if he can acknowledge and approve of himself, then he can create or destroy a universe. If he can approve of himself. Communication is the solvent. We know that very well. In two-way communication, we get too much two-way communication with some preclear that's very massy. And he'll start to sort of as is, and he starts to fall to pieces. Ridges start to fall apart, various things happen. In other words, two-way communication is a solvent. Here we have two terminals interchanging one against the other, two intelligences bearing on the same subject. As long as we have this, we can create and make solid things which both intelligence can now understand exist. You follow me? If we have to have two people to know that something is true, if we have to have Bill say, yes, it is there, in order to have it there, then we have lost control of our own reality. It takes two terminals to make a universe. If we can't be both of the terminals, then we have to have some factor over here that accidentally, one time or another, is going to agree upon the reality of something, and then it'll be real to both of us, so then it's true. So we get proof. We have to prove it to somebody else. And so we get masses, and we start carrying around masses, just in case we meet a doubter that doesn't believe that we were in the second Trojan War. Trojan War II, we used to call it in the old days. And so we exhibit covertly a spear sticking into our skull by having a tic de la rue or something, you know. We keep going through the motion and having the mass of a wound. And this proves what? Now, if you were to ask a preclear just over and over, you'd say, all right, now what does that prove? Now, all right, let's take your right foot. Now, give me some things your right foot prove. Things your left foot proves. Now, give me some things the color of your hair proves. Now, give me some things your invisibility as a Thetan proves. You see, we could just go on and on and on on such a track. It's not a process. It's a very interesting little adventure. You'll find out that everything you're packing around is proving something. As you show a guy a pack of cigarettes, his pack of cigarettes, and you say, all right, you got a pack of cigarettes. What's that prove? He's liable to get mighty mad at you and upset and so forth. It's not a process. It's an adventure. All right. Therefore, if these masses are demonstrating something to somebody else, we have the clearest, cleanest look we can get at this two-terminal thing, you see. We don't have to have a mass to prove anything to ourselves, but we could get into a state where we thought we did have to have. It'd be kind of a skitsy situation, wouldn't it? We have to have a mass to prove that to ourselves that we are. We have to have a space to prove to ourselves that we're moving. That's an interesting state of being. All right. A man's reality is as good as he does not need approval or agreement to have a reality. And it's as poor as he needs approval, agreement, and very precisely acknowledgement. Now, if this individual has to have you as an auditor say, okay, 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 you see, on and on, for any dissolution of his bank to take place, it becomes quite obvious that this individual is very desperately in need of another terminal to have it be true. It's only true if the other terminal says it's true. So we have people running around trying to find acknowledgement. And they, women put up costumes and men put up biceps and so forth, and they go rushing around trying to get somebody else to say what? Not really, that is a nice dress, or that is a very nice biceps. They really aren't going in that direction. All they're doing is saying, please, won't somebody say okay? And the way people don't say okay is a very simple thing. They merely say, well, I had not had dress like that once. They don't say okay by saying, you know, my brother Bill, he measures 94 inches around his right arm. They just don't say okay. So we don't establish a two-way communication. Everybody goes around worrying about this, and it makes the nicest game there is in the universe. The only solvent there is for any mass or experience or consideration that you have, there are two solvents. One is simply change your mind, and then the other one is communicate. It's me. All right, now if we believe that we have to have an uncontrollable, uncontrolled party to do the other side of the communication line, we're sunk. And our reality will just get worse and worse and poorer and poorer. So we can establish how bad off our preclear is by how many masses he's packing around. You got it? He's packing around a lot of mental image masses and that sort of thing. Every one of these is waiting on somebody's approval. If he doesn't want them, he's got these mental image masses. He's got this huge ridge right over there, see? And he's aware of the thing every once in a while. He doesn't want it. So what must he be doing? He's waiting for somebody to say, oh, you've got a ridge. Well, okay. Or that's the way it is, or anything. And then he will let the ridge start to fall to pieces. He could put it back there with a single postulate, say, there is a mass there, pang. He could also take it away with a single postulate. He could say, there is a mass there. There's always a void in people's imagination, usually. How did the mass get there? It got there by saying, there is a mass there. How does it disappear? It disappears by saying, there is a mass there. It doesn't disappear by saying, there was a mass there. Or, I am sorry I put the mass there. But on a little lower echelon, we can get some communication going and it'll start to disappear. Or we can stop some communication and it will get solider. So we have another agreement earlier than having said the mass. Now, communication would not make anything disintegrate which had been postulated or created before the agreement of communication's disintegrating factor. Because that's all that is an agreement. That's another posture. So we made a mass, and it didn't disintegrate on communication, two-way communication. It's just obvious that it was made at a time when we didn't think two-way communication would do it. You got the idea. We could get all sorts of odd combinations going. The question is what is the common denominator of all of our complications? And this common denominator is a very easy thing to look over. Communication. Who needs communication? Well, an individual needs communication with others, primarily as a gain. Secondarily, he needs communication with others to, as is, knock out of existence or actually bring about the reality of motions, masses, and spaces. And if he needs communication with somebody else, it must assume that he cannot communicate with himself. And an individual who totally cannot communicate with himself, that is to say, totally cannot put any dependence on having put an okay out there, and that's good enough, why, this individual will have a very poor reality. Why? Because he's packing so much material around, waiting for somebody else to say okay, that he himself will eventually have to say, it doesn't exist. It's not real. Fellow pleading with his bank, please don't be real. You see this? So at first he keeps holding it out there for somebody else to say okay, and they never say okay, and it finally starts to bother him. He gets in his road. So he finally says, well, it doesn't exist, and there goes his reality. That is his standard method of occlusion. Now, out of all of this theory, a great many processes could proceed. One of the most interesting processes that could proceed is simply getting somebody to think. And so I'll give you, but not completely, but a very quick rundown on the six basic processes as they function. Six basic processes run this way. We make a pre-clear aware of a session by making him first aware of the auditor and then the fact he's being audited. He has to be aware of the fact he's being audited, that there is an auditor there and that he's there. That's the first thing we do with him. One of the ways to do that would be to give him an exhaustive assessment. Take a big assessment blank, one of the old HDRF assessment blanks. We've got tons of them. And just start writing anything it says on it. You know, father, mother, aunt, allies. Just keep asking him and asking him and asking him. See? For material, material, material. He'll finally find out he's being audited. He will discover that there is an auditor here that he is here, that he is answering questions and so forth. Now, it might only take a person a couple of seconds to find this out, but it might take him 85 hours. And if you haven't discovered for yourself whether or not the preclear knows he's being audited, then you haven't started the session. Auditing a preclear who doesn't know he's being audited is very poor indeed. All right, the next step up from that would be to get him to think a thought. Is that cute? So the whole category of process is getting to think a thought. Now, how many processes are there in this? There are many covert ways to make him think a thought. R220, problems and solutions, is amongst the very best. But that is what? That's getting him to think a thought, isn't it? Now you could get him to think a thought about something else by going into a bracket. Just getting him to think a thought. What problems could you be yourself? This makes him think a thought. What solutions could you be to yourself? This makes him think a thought. To others, this is a little bit bigger. So you're starting to take in another universe. So we kind of keep it on one universe for quite a while. That's why we do that. So we've got this category here. Think a thought. Now there's another whole category of thoughts that he could think, which he never does think, but which he thinks all the time. Consequences. And this is amongst the very important thoughts that should be tapped. The consequences of them. And there's a whole category under the heading, what would happen if? What would happen if? Now let's apply the whole tone scale and subscale to what would happen if. What would happen if you were dead? What would happen if you got mad? What would happen if you were tired? We could go through any number of random things. We'd start out on the sub-zero scale. What would happen if you were dead? We'd go up immediately into what would happen if. This is, by the way, very significant stuff. It actually has to do with computation to answer all of these questions. But he's thinking a thought, but he's thinking a complex thought, which is a computation. All right, what would happen if you're dead? What would happen if you hid? What would happen if you protected something? What would happen if you owned something? What would happen if you became apathetic? What would happen if you started to cry or felt sad? See, grief. What would happen if you became afraid or terrified? What would happen if you got mad? And that is the most important one there is on that whole scale. What would happen if you get mad? Because an individual who starts to go out of communication with things starts to get mad. If he's not able to get mad, he can't go out of communication with things, which leaves him stuck on the whole time track. So that's a very important one. And then what would happen if you got antagonistic? What would happen if you got bored? That seems to be a very important one to a lot of people. What would happen if you became enthusiastic? What would happen if you were energetic? What would happen if you were serene? There's a tremendous battery, isn't it? There's the whole kit and caboodle of the emotional scale on what would happen if. Well, problems, solutions, and consequences belong right there with the important ones. What would happen if you got mad? That's the most important one, because that's the one thing that we can't handle in an auditing session, and we can't handle apathy very well either, so it's kind of important. But if our preclear starts to get mad, he'll blow the session and we can't go on auditing, so we better get this out of the road. And what would happen if you got mad, right along with R220, problems and solutions. So we get that bailed out and we get that squared away, and we get into the next category, which is the splitting of the universes. And here, for the first time, we are in communication. We've come upscale to communication, and his reality should have carried along with us. So we have splitting universes as the next one up now. And we could just chop universes apart with communication. What would you say to? What could you say to? It's just that. What could so-and-so say to you? What could you say to so-and-so? What could so-and-so say to you? And we're making the guy actually actively do an interesting fact. We're making him acknowledge himself. Isn't that cute? And that's a natural state, people acknowledging themselves. And so this will bring him up into an ability to as is, all kinds of things. That process just goes faster and faster and faster. Your next category up above this is the physical universe. Contact with it, AC. And then to communicate with it, opening procedure by duplication. And then remedy of havingness is actually today an exteriorization step by having him shove things into his body. And Route 1 is actually a number of ways of spotting spots. So spotting spots and Route 1 are practically synonymous processes. All right. And there you've got your six basic processes, and what are you trying to undo with these processes? You're trying to undo his need of another party to agree with him so it can disappear or become true. And how do we do it? We go far enough south to find his reality. And how do we find his reality? We find his reality by getting him, for God's sakes, aware of being audited, or aware that there's somebody around him or doing something for him or to him. And we can start at that point. And we go from that point up to making him think a thought of one kind or another. Making him think a thought and think a thought. The more we do in the field of thought, the better our preclear improves. The more we do in the field of masses, motions, and spaces, the less he improves. We could handle masses, motions, and spaces forever without clearing a preclear. That is why science is still here today. It has persisted because it has never helped anybody. Okay, thank you.